In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
It's time to pass the popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall, Cinema 10, Stillwater Avenue in Bangor, where they have a film for everyone in the family, and by the Bangor Drive-In, Alan Adams from The Main Edge. Back in studio with us after a week's vacation for all of us. Good to see you in the flesh, Mr. Adams.
Yeah, it's nice to see you guys, too. It's good to be back.
We're excited. I think Harry's, I don't know how he does it. I mean, he's younger than me, but that so is everybody. But to drive straight to New Orleans and back.
I was going
to
say, I feel like you must have just, like, driven like directly here and just gotten out of the car and gone to work. Like,
if I could pull that off, I would, because it'd give me an extra day in the city.
He literally parked the car in the parking lot, woofed down that last spoonful of jambalaya and came in. Shrimp on his breath. Maybe some rum.
But we got in like at 7 o'clock last night. So I had, you know, I had 12 hours.
Okay, so you had a little bit of time to recover. Yeah. That's good. That's good.
About as much time as you had to recover from the Emoji Movie.
Man, do you want to start with that one? We could definitely start with that one.
And look, we've talked the time and again about the dumb ideas and the lack of creativity in Hollywood, but wow, this is how far we've sunk that you're going to make a movie based on emojis.
Oh, and it's so much worse than you think it is, because
I think it's pretty bad.
I know, but here's the thing: like, it's not just that they've anthropomorphized these emojis in an effort to imbue them with personalities and whatnot. It's a whole thing. Like, your smartphone, every app is like its own little world. Like, that's the conceit of this movie. And so, in your text messaging app, you have the emojis, and there's a whole thing where you've got an emoji named Gene, played by T.J. Miller, who is getting ready to inherit the mantle of the meh emoji from his parents.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the thing. But it turns out that he has difficulty keeping to one single face. And so that winds up presenting obstacles to the point where the whole emoji way of life is threatened, because the owner of the phone, a high school freshman named Alex, is struggling with his phone and his crush on a girl, and the phone keeps causing problems. So he's going to get it wiped and reprogrammed, which would eliminate all of the emojis and whatnot. And so Gene, along with his friend High Five, who's the High Five, voiced by James Corden, go off on a search to find a legendary hacker by the name of Jailbreak, voiced by Anna Faris, to reprogram Gene and help High Five become popular again, because that's a thing that's in there for some reason. And so on and so forth. I'm not gonna talk about the story anymore, because it really doesn't matter. But what's really frightening about this movie is the fact that it's essentially a 90-minute commercial for the internet. Like, it's everything about this movie is designed to make you feel good about how thoroughly entwined with the internet your entire life is. And it's not just emojis, like generic, like, there's Facebook, there's YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, frickin' Dropbox. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, let's talk about how weird that there's like there's a plot point built around Dropbox in what's ostensibly a children's movie.
So did all these companies pay for product placement in this?
I have to assume they did. It's a Sony Pictures operation. And I understand that you're making something about the internet, you need to maybe include these sorts of things, but I have to assume that promotional considerations were applied from the following. And the reality is, it's essentially a weird kind of almost propaganda film. Like, it sounds so weird to say that out loud, but the truth is, it's like The message of the movie is ostensibly be yourself and everything's going to be okay. What the message of the movie actually is don't ever look away from your phone. Everything you need to do is on the internet. Embrace the internet. And I understand that that's the world that we live in, but is this really the kind of movie that we want kids to see?
Yeah.
Like it's a weird, there's a weird sort of indoctrination kind of vibe to it that kind of made me a little uncomfortable. And I mean, as far as the kids who saw the movie in the screening that I saw, I mean, I don't know how it actually, like, I don't know how much kids actually think about this stuff, but you have to imagine that on some level, it's kind of like, it's kind of making an impact, and I don't feel good about it.
Well, and it's scary to imagine that the kids in the target audience for this even have phones, frankly.
Yeah, you know, I mean, yeah, no, these are, you know, you're aiming at...
Why does an 8-year-old need a smartphone, for crying out loud?
Yeah, no, they most certainly do not. And there's some kind of on-the-nose, guest spots from various people who totally make sense. Like Gene's dad, who's the lead Stephen Wright, which, you know, of course.
Okay.
There's an internet troll voiced by Jeffrey Ross, because of course.
Yes.
Sean Hayes is in it. Christina Aguilera is in it. Rachel Ray. And of course, the aforementioned Patrick Stewart as the poop emoji. Sir Patrick Stewart as the poop emoji. We can't stress this enough. It's Patrick Stewart as talking poop. I get it. You know, and like I've said it before, I'll say it again, you know, beach houses don't build themselves. You know, I imagine there was a sizable check involved for what probably amounted to like a day and a half worth of work. I get it. But at the same time, it's like, I mean, Sir Patrick, you're a cinematic treasure. Could you please, you know, maybe not?
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been good.
Were his lines funny? I mean, because my thought is that sometimes these guys will go in to record just their lines and not really have any idea of what the whole, how much his emoji represents the whole rest of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. I get that. And I suppose that's certainly possible, especially for someone like him who, I mean, it's, you know, he's in a couple of scenes. Like, he has a handful of lines. But the unfortunate reality is, I don't really think any of it was funny.
Yeah, because and not only him, because people like Stephen Wright. I mean, he's really good and he's really funny, and you get the feeling that maybe some of these people they were able to get in this movie didn't understand just how awful the movie was going to be.
And I think that's it. And I think it's probably hard, especially with animated fare, especially to read a screenplay and have a real understanding of how big a misfire it could potentially be. And this is one, but you know, that being said, like I'm sure kids are going to see it. You know what I mean? And I don't anticipate this is going to be the last emoji movie or its ilk that we see.
All right. So that's behind us, thankfully. Let's move on to the other film you saw, Alan.
So I went to see Atomic Blonde. It's the new action movie, Charlize Theron. Just so it's clear, it is pronounced Theron, which I learned this morning. Like, for my entire life, it's been Theron. Like, I've always pronounced it Theron. And it is Theron. Charlize Theron. Straight from the horse's mouth.
Well, I knew that.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're right. You know, yeah, speaking about it.
Yeah, no, there are a lot of words that I don't necessarily know how to say. But yeah. So, Atomic Blonde, it's this sort of period action movie. It's set in late 80s Berlin. In the days immediately before the fall of the Berlin Wall, Charlize Theron plays Lorraine Broughton, who's a secret agent. She's working for MI6. She's been assigned by her superiors to take out this espionage ring that has killed a number of undercover agents and procured one of these standard sort of action thriller MacGuffins, a list that contains all the names of the undercover agents and, you know, and their jobs or whatever. Like, you see this in literally every other one of these kinds of movies, and that's fine. Like, you need something to, you need something for the, you know, for your hero to chase. But she winds up in Berlin, and she's assigned to make contact, with an agent who's been who's kind of gone to ground, kind of gone native over the. He's been in Berlin for 10 years. A guy named Percival, played by James McAvoy, who's absolutely great in this. Just as a by the way, and yeah, and so she teams up with him, and they have to try to figure out who's after this list, who has the list, how can they get the list, and how they how can they you know protect the you know the assets that are you know named in the list without. The numerous shadowy factions who are pursuing it. There's the KGB. There's the CIA. There are you know the you know various and sundry communist you know East and West Berlinites all you know on the prowl looking for this stuff. And in the midst of it all, you get to see you get to watch Charlize Theron just beat the crap out of a ton of dudes. And when she's not beating the crap out of dudes, she's shooting dudes, and dudes are shooting at her, and it's just the comparisons that keep getting tossed around are to something like John Wick, which I don't think is I don't think is quite right. I think this movie is a bit more grounded than those movies are in a semblance of and I do mean a semblance of realism. Like it, there's still plenty of over the top action sequences. That are just you know absolutely nuts, but it's a striking movie to look at. Like the director David Leitch is one of the guys who worked on the first John Wick movie, so he has that kind of sensibility. So the action sequences are very very sharp, very pure, very fun to watch. The narrative stuff it's not super complex. It's not a super tough plot to follow, but that's okay. Like I don't necessarily need. You know, 3 days of the Condor or whatever. Like I need, you know, just give me a story that goes from A to B. Give me some good fight scenes, some gunfights, you know, a couple of good car chases and you've got me. One of the things about this movie that I think is really important, especially in a summer where we've already seen, a wildly successful, female led action movie, is I think, it's not going to happen today. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not necessarily going to happen soon, but I think we can finally catch a glimpse off in the distance of the time when we can actually, when we don't have to qualify a movie like this by calling it a female-led action movie. We can just call it a good action movie. Because that's the thing about this movie. Like, it's a good, it's not a good, you know, female starring action movie. It's just a good action movie. Like, you don't, it doesn't matter who's in the driver's seat. Like, right. It has a wonderful energy. Like, she's fantastic. And honestly, I think, you know, I think Theron probably has as good a chance of anyone as of becoming that sort of iconic female action star. Like, she's, we've seen her in a couple of things that have been really, really strong. Like her work in Mad Max Fury Road was great. You know, and she's, you know, she's made her, she, you know, she's done her time in the franchise. Like she was in the last Fast and Furious movie and was, you know, was not terrible in that, which, frankly, that's about the best you can hope for, in one of those movies, as far as performances are concerned. But she's just really talented. And she clearly, has embraced the idea of the action genre, in a way that doesn't, it doesn't feel like she's dabbling. Like she doesn't feel like a dilettante. Like it really seems like something she's committed to doing and doing well. And once you have that commitment, especially from an actress of her caliber, the sky's the limit, I think. And, you know, I think Atomic Blonde is a really good example of the potential of an actress of this caliber or, you know, and there, I mean, there are any number of other ones who I think could, you know, carry the torch just as well, but it's, you know, it's her moment right now. And I think if she continues down this path, I think there's potential, for these movies to continue, just getting, better and better. Like Atomic Blonde, super fun. And, yeah. And it's a fantastic performance from her, McAvoy, who does all this genre stuff. He's wildly talented as well. I think a little underrated due to some of the choices that he makes for the types of movies that he does. But the two of them together are great. Wonderful supporting turns from like guys like Toby Jones, John Goodman's in this movie for a couple of scenes. Like just all around a wonderful cast, really compelling visual aesthetic, great action sequences. I mean, Atomic Blonde, if you dig action movies, like this is where it's at.
Very cool. Yeah, before you go, Alan Adams with us from The Main Edge. I wanted to get your thoughts because I know you were a big fan of the work of the uber talented Sam Shepard.
Oh man. Yeah. That was, you know, they're always going to be those names that you hear, you know, that they pass along and they sting you just a little bit harder, than the other ones. And Sam Shepard is one of those guys for me. Like when I was in college, one of the first plays that I read that really struck me, that really like had a genuine like and powerful visceral kind of impact on me was True West in I read that the role I played in college that made me think that this was something that I wanted to do for the rest of my life was I played the role of Tilden in his Buried Child. Years later when I'm starting to kind of maybe lose that, lose that passion for, you know, the experimental and the offbeat, I did a production of True West, directed by our friend Adam Kirkendall. Yeah,
which was phenomenal. You and Putnam Smith.
Yeah. Still, if not the best thing I've ever done, certainly in the conversation. And it just reignited that fire again. So he's always, Shepard's work has always had a very real place as far as my connection to the stage. And the fact that, you know, he's not going to write anything else is really heartbreaking to me. And again, like, I mean, he was, you know, he was in his early 70s. He certainly wasn't as prolific as he used to be. But, you know, he was still writing. And he was still acting, and that was, that's one of those things. Like, I don't have the connection to him as an actor that a lot of people do, but you look at stuff like, the one you automatically go to is The Right Stuff. Like, he was phenomenal in that movie, but just one of these incredible, incredible creative talents that I am going to, you know, dearly miss, and I think the creative community as a whole has suffered a very great loss today.
Yeah, and it's something when a guy who was nominated for an Oscar, and I think you can fairly say underrated as an actor.
Yeah, yeah.
Sam Shepard, 73. Alan, thanks as always.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams, Main Edge, Pass the Popcorn on Downtown.